I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly,
major missile strike. Iran attacks Israel amid warnings for citizens to shelter in place. We have the latest, including the response from Israel and the United States.
The faithful in Lebanon. A Catholic priest tells us about daily life in the midst of war. Labor pains. A closer look at the dock worker strike in the U.S. and what it could mean for the economy. Plus, community notes. Pope Francis releases his prayer intention for the month of October. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Our top story tonight, we are following a developing story in the Middle East right now. Iran launches nearly 200 missiles at Israel. And President Joe Biden directs the U.S. military to aid Israel's defense against Iranian attacks and shoot down those missiles. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. The U.S. has been trying to avert a wider war in the Middle East, calling repeatedly for ceasefires. But now, Iran attacks again with ballistic missiles. Earlier today, this taking place, aimed at various targets across Israel.
Oh, God. Okay, guys, we got to get off the roof. These are coming down right next to us here.
Iran fires a wave of missiles into Israel, a sharp escalation of the months-long conflict between Israel and the Iran-backed terror groups Hezbollah and Hamas. The White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan addressing reporters.
Obviously, this is a significant escalation by Iran, a significant event, and it is equally significant that we were able to step up with Israel and create a situation in which no one was killed in this attack in Israel, so far as we know at this time.
As Israel ordered residents to head to bomb shelters and as air raid sirens sounded, Iran says it was retaliation for the killing of Hezbollah and Hamas leaders. At the State Department, spokesman Matthew Miller reacts.
This was a brazen, unacceptable attack by Iran, and every nation in the world must join us in condemning it.
Also today, an Israeli airstrike hitting a residential building near Beirut, not far from the Iranian embassy. Israel warned people to evacuate communities in southern Lebanon after it sent ground troops across the border to attack Hezbollah. Also today, moments before the massive barrage of rockets from Iran, Israeli police say several people were killed in a shooting in Tel Aviv. Police say the two suspects who were killed opened fire on a boulevard.
We're also aware of reports of a terrorist attack in Jaffa that took the lives of a number of Israeli civilians and wounded several others today. Our condolences go out to the families of the victims.
And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rallying Israeli citizens in what he calls the campaign against Iran's axis of evil, asking Israeli citizens two things.
One, to strictly obey the directives of the frontline command. It saves lives. And second, to stand together. We will stand firm together in the testing days ahead. Together we will stand, together we will fight, and together we will win.
Now, you may recall back in April, Iran directly attacked Israel, but few of its projectiles reached their targets. A U.S.-led coalition shot many of them down. Others failed at launch or crashed during flight. All this as concerns of a wider regional conflict are growing tonight. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And as the fighting escalates in the Middle East, millions of people are caught in the crossfire, including in Lebanon. According to the country's prime minister, Israel's recent airstrikes on the militant group Hezbollah may have already displaced 1 million people across Lebanon. Among those forced from their homes due to the ongoing conflict include some of Lebanon's Christian communities whose lives have been turned upside down by the violence in the region. Still, many Christians choose to stay and pray and hope that peace ultimately prevails. And for more, let's go to Father Talal Hashem, president of the Holy Spirit University of Catholic in Lebanon. Father Talal, good to be with you today. You're here in Washington, D.C. today, and fortunately safe, but that isn't exactly the case for many people in your country right now. Can you talk to us more about that and what life is like now for the Lebanese people?
First of all, thank you for having me. Yes, our people in Lebanon are struggling today. They are worried. They are shocked. But they have faith, and they pray, and we pray for them. Actually, I'm in Washington now, but I'm traveling back this evening, and we'll be there tomorrow because we have a community there that is helping those who are in need.
Are you concerned at all? You said you're traveling back to Lebanon. Are you concerned at all about your own safety going back home?
But to be honest, I'm one of those who are traveling and who are exposed to this political crisis and military tension in the Middle East. No, actually, to be honest, no, I'm not afraid. I would like to be there so we can not giving up together.
Yeah, and this fighting is impacting everyone over there. I mean, you well know that. But Father Talal, can you specifically talk to us about how it's impacting the Christian communities in Lebanon and how they're coping with all of this?
Well, our Christian community is a little bit far off the military tension. However, we have many Lebanese people who are Catholic that are near this tension. That's why we are worried. We are worried about them. We are worried about every human being in Lebanon because there is a big, big difference between what Lebanese people want and what the political parties are behaving these days.
Yeah. Father Talal, we're almost out of time, but I think it's really important you mentioned faith. Faith is really important during a time like this. Can you talk to us more about that and maybe what you're telling your own people there?
Actually, this is not the first time we've been through such a situation. That's why, because we believe, because we have a faith, because we have hope, and we are seeking peace and at least stability, our hope is to get this peace as soon as possible so people can live safely.
Absolutely. We're praying for that indeed. Father Talal, thank you so much for spending time with us and talking to us about this. God bless you and safe travels to you. We're praying for you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And turning back to the United States now, where the deaths of at least 150 people in six states are being attributed to Helene. President Biden plans to survey the damage in North Carolina tomorrow following the bleak assessment from the state's governor.
We know that the devastation brought by Hurricane Helene is beyond belief. Communities were wiped off the map. Dozens of lives lost. Hundreds of roads remain damaged or impassable. Communication has been difficult due to cell phone and power outages.
Volunteers have fanned out in North Carolina, knocking on hundreds of doors in an effort to find missing residents.
Yesterday, our volunteers with the Register of Deeds knocked on more than 300 doors to do wellness checks on community members whose loved ones have reported that they haven't heard from them or asked us to check on. We're still very much in active search and rescue. We're reaching out and trying to find those individuals who have still trapped in their homes.
Our supplies are being delivered by air, truck, and even mule to hard-hit Asheville and its nearby mountain town. Several main routes into Asheville are washed away or blocked by mudslides. The city's water system is severely damaged. And for a closer look at the relief efforts taking place in North Carolina, we bring in Monsignor Patrick Winslow from the Diocese of Charlotte. Monsignor, thank you for making the time for us today, considering everything that's going on. Can you give us a perspective on the size and the scope of the affected area inside of your diocese?
Well, for us, the impacted area includes 44 churches, more than half the counties that constitute Western North Carolina, the Diocese of Charlotte. And that's an enormous amount of territory. The territory all the way above Atlanta, moving a little more eastward toward Asheville. We have a large footprint in that region. The impact has been extremely difficult to process, in large part because we've had such limited and sketchy contact with people because the communication lines have been out with the cell towers down, with roads being blocked, with bridges being out. So we've been communicating ever since the storm passed us in the hours of noon, 1 o'clock on Friday, making some contact with some people who have been reflecting really how tragic and how difficult circumstances are. And from that moment on, we've been mobilizing, getting our resources out to those people who are in need. Basic things, diapers, baby food, water, things of that nature.
And I know that you have launched an online appeal to help folks there. Talk to us a little bit more about that and what's been the response so far?
So people are tremendous. They're actually calling our offices, wanting to know how they can give. We're going to be having a special second collection this upcoming Sunday at Masses. We have our websites, which are available, our Catholic Charities of Diocese of Charlotte website, which you can also get there through our charlottediocese.org website. So people are able to come to the Diocese of Charlotte in several different ways and be able to make donations, where we will make sure that those resources are brought to bear on the circumstances that the people are facing right now.
Yeah, and it's so hard to believe. I mean, we see the images on TV or maybe online, but it's nothing like you see in person. And I know the devastation can really be a challenge on a person's faith during this time. How do you approach the emotional and spiritual side with the faithful as they're going through all this and in grieving processes? Many lives have been lost as well.
It's a heartache, especially when people who are at a distance have their loved ones, their friends, and they can't reach them. They can't make contact with them. I mean, that's extremely difficult. Then you have the people that are there who've lost loved ones already. That's very disorienting, and it's hard to make sense of. And then, of course, you have the unknowns. We have a number of people where their identities are we have their identities, but we don't know exactly where they are. And so we're not sure if they're safe or if they're in harm's way or by something worse has happened. And so this is just an extremely difficult position to be in. You know, as I reflect upon it from a spiritual perspective, I mean, my first thought is, in the midst of all this tragedy and difficulty, how through ordinary events of life, on a regular day, the most important things that matter always seem to hide in plain sight. But as we confront these challenges, this darkness, these difficulties, how the things that matter the most start to come out of the shadows, loving our neighbor, relying on God, asking God for his grace and his help, just recognizing how frail we all are. And those things, I think, are inspiring our communities, inspiring the faithful of Western North Carolina and the Diocese of Charlotte. And we're beginning to make some real inroads and bringing resources to bear. And we begin to see how the strength of faith is being able to really give people that hope that they need.
Yeah, we definitely need that hope, and we're praying for everyone. Monsignor, before I let you go, can you just give that information again for people who maybe want to help out?
Certainly. So the diocesan website is charlottediocese.org. We also have Catholic Charities of Charlotte. You can link to it from the charlottediocese.org website. Those two locations, those two websites, are where we are receiving online gifts and donations to get resources to the people who need it.
Yeah, it's so important. Monsignor, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this and praying for everyone down there in the Charlotte area, for sure. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Well, as the Southeast recovers from Hurricane Helene, Georgia has yet another problem on its hands, a shelter-in-place order following a fire at a chlorine factory. Residents east of Atlanta were warned to take shelter if winds push the chemical clouds over their neighborhood. Atlanta firefighters are monitoring the fallout, urging anyone with irritation symptoms to please call the Poison Control Center hotline. The fire was brought under control on Sunday afternoon, and federal officials are investigating the cause of the fire. Well, tonight marks another milestone in the race for the White House. The vice presidential nominees will face off in a debate, and we can show you the stage set up for the debate in New York City. CBS News will host the matchup beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern. This is expected to be the only debate between Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Republican Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Vice presidential debates not always made a big difference, but this time could be different, with polls showing a close contest. Well, former President Jimmy Carter turns 100 years old today. He is the first American president to reach the century mark. The Georgia native is known for being public about his Christian beliefs and his public service. He has authored 30 books, mostly related to his faith. He also is celebrated as the first president to welcome a pope to the White House. That was back in 1979. Happy birthday, Mr. President. And we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including impact on the economy, how the dock workers' strike here in the United States could have an impact on your wallet, and the inauguration of the first female president of Mexico. For the first time in decades, dock workers at 36 ports across the eastern United States are on strike. The work stoppage could have a big impact on the supply chain. The president of the International Longshoremen's Association had a dire warning for consumers.
If we have to be out here a month or 2 months, this world will collapse. Don't blame them. Don't blame me. Blame them.
Workers began walking off the job early this morning. They are demanding higher wages, but they also want automation on docks to be completely banned. Dan, for more, let's bring in Jason Miller, the interim chairperson for the Department of Supply Chain Management at Michigan State University. Jason, great to be with you today. So let's delve into this a little bit more. Do we know exactly what items will be impacted by this strike?
Yeah, we have a very good sense of that. The Census Bureau publishes data down to the pounds of bananas or the number of tons of inserts, you know, whatever commodity like steel come through each port in the United States. So we have a very good sense of what comes in.
Yeah, and can you give us an example of maybe some of the items? Do we know that yet?
Yeah, no, exactly. So top imported commodities that come in are things like furniture, fresh fruits and vegetables, auto parts, that's one we're especially watching closely. Coffee is high on the list. But literally, there's over 10,000 different types of goods that we bring in, and it really ranges the spectrum. Another very affected commodity is solar cells, so solar panels that are installed to generate electricity.
Yeah, so a variety of items, a lot of them everyday items. Can you give us a sense of how this is going to affect us, the consumers?
So it really depends on the length of the strike. If it's this week, only so 2-3 days, the impact essentially won't be really felt by anybody. Once we get beyond those sort of a 3 or 4 day window, you can think that the amount of disruption sort of increases at an increasing rate as the strike goes on longer. So essentially, it's a downward spiral. My sort of rule of thumb is if we get into sort of the 2 week period, that's when we'll start to see more systematic shortages of certain items. So let's say imported European wines or beers, potentially certain fresh fruits that will start to affect the consumer. But again, on a rather isolated scale, because the vast majority of, let's say, foods or beverages that we consume here, we make here.
You know, talk to us about the sticking points here for the longshoremen. We had mentioned, you know, higher wages and they don't want automation on the docks. But what are they talking about when they say higher wages?
So the ILA is asking for approximately 77% to 78% wage increases. USMX, the group they're negotiating with, has recently raised the offer to 50%, but the ILA has already rejected that, and that's a 78% increase over the next 6 years of that contract.
Wow. Any sense of, you know, them coming to the middle on this agreement or not? Do you think they'll be able to come to a negotiation point soon?
I would like to hope they come to a negotiation point soon, but I do think it'll take a little time. Because of the intricacies with how container operations work in the United States, every dollar of additional pay raise is essentially a dollar that comes out of the ocean carrier's pockets. And so, you know, them offering, you know, 50% and having that rejected, each additional dollar essentially is reducing their profitability. And while the container operators like Maersk and Mediterranean Shipping Company did have record profits in 2021 and 2022, and also in 2024 due to the Red Sea crisis, they are, you know, essentially these have been sort of one-off events. And so each additional dollar they're paying, that's not a dollar into their pocket. And so, you know, right now we're at loggerheads. Also, it's important to note that the U.S. ports are very inefficient compared to the rest of the world. Of the striking ports involved, the World Bank and S&P Global rank Charleston as the most efficient, and that is the 60th position in the world. Savannah of the striking ports is the least efficient at a shocking 398th. So U.S. ports are very inefficient. Wow. And one of the reasons for that is the very limited amount of automation.
Yeah, well, this sounds like a really actually complicated situation. We hope it gets worked out soon. Jason, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, now to Mexico, where Claudia Sheinbaum takes the oath of office, becoming the country's first female president. Now, the 62-year-old is promising to continue many of the policies of her predecessor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. His supporters said goodbye to him with songs in front of the National Palace. Sheinbaum, a leftist and former scientist, is facing pressing problems like high levels of violence and a slow-moving economy. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the Church in China. A group dedicated to religious freedom issues a troubling new report on the communist country, plus a report from Rome on a new initiative on nonviolence. Says China is moving crosses from churches and replacing images of Christ with pictures of communist leader Xi Jinping. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom also says the Communist Party is trying to, quote, forcefully eradicate religious elements that the party deems contrary to its political and policy agenda. Pope Francis releases his prayer intention for the month of October. In it, he calls on the faithful to take responsibility for the church. In the video message, the Holy Father emphasizes his invitation for every Christian to walk together as a community, adding that we are all responsible for the Church's mission. Pope Francis also asked for the prayers for the Synod on Synodality. And finally, tonight, a new initiative in Rome is promoting peace for the Catholic Institute for Nonviolence, launched on Sunday with help from two cardinals. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sidegren has more.
I ask all parties to cease fire immediately in Lebanon, in Gaza, in the rest of Palestine, and in Israel.
Nonviolence is at the heart of the gospel and the teachings of Jesus Christ. Pope Francis has many times appealed to all parties involved in ongoing wars to lay down their weapons and to seek peace. Given the challenges presented by these current conflicts and terrible violence, the Catholic peace movement, Pax Christi International, has inaugurated a new initiative for nonviolence.
And the Catholic Nonviolence Initiative started 8 years ago as a way to influence our church bodies, because we are a Catholic movement, peace movement. And in our dialogue with other faith organizations, we found that we need more understanding about active nonviolence within the church.
As the world is facing the rise of authoritarianism and the decline of democracy in many countries, it has become more important than ever to invest in alternatives to war and violence. The new initiative strongly advocates for nuclear disarmament and for a just peace in the Holy Land.
We're in the middle of a nightmare now in the Middle East, where retribution on both sides is cascading. We just, in these days, have seen it now erupt in Lebanon. And this is a cycle which does not seem to be nearing an end. My hope for the Institute is that it might yield a broader understanding of how choices for nonviolence, active nonviolence on behalf of justice, can be as effective in many situations as a recourse to violence. And certainly it's more in keeping with our Catholic faith.
While there are some rare cases of legitimate armed defense, Cardinal McElroy explained that this must be pursued only after true nonviolent efforts. The Institute will mainly work as a virtual institute, embarking on the mission of making research, resources, and experiences in nonviolence more accessible for both church leaders and global institutions.
In the Holy Land, there have been Israelis, Palestinians, who have been leading nonviolent dialogue and nonviolent resistance challenging occupation for years, centering those voices, amplifying the work that they're doing is critical. So we need to be encouraging and electing leaders and officials who are in a position and committed to centering support for those involved in active nonviolent movements.
The Institute aims at reclaiming the nonviolence of Jesus, the Prince of Peace, as not merely a spiritual ideal, but a practical ethic that can transform the world. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.